This is KYUK News, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Fishing restrictions are loosening along the Kuskokwim River. Beginning today, subsistence users can use any size mesh along the river's main stem, and those nets can stretch a maximum of 50 fathoms in length. The closed waters around the mouth of the Aniak River will also open today. Subsistence fishing and salmon spawning Kuskokwim tributaries will remain closed to gillnets until August 31st. Those tributaries are the Gweethluk River to its confluence with Kuskokwak Slough, the Kasigluk River and Kizaralik River to their confluences with Old Kuskokwak Slough, as well as the Tuluksak River and the Aniak River. Subsistence fishing for king salmon with hook and line will remain closed until August 31st in the following tributaries: Gweethluk, Kizaralik, Kasigluk, Tuluksak, and Aniak. Any kings caught in these waterways must be returned to the water alive. And also today, commercial fishing is opening in the lower Kuskokwim River. There is no fish processor on the river, so the opportunity is reserved for registered catcher sellers. There will be 5 8-hour commercial periods this month with 6-inch or less mesh gillnets that may not exceed 50 fathoms in length or 45 meshes in depth. In criminal justice news, an unusual court case concluded in Bethel last week when an Ammonic man, Michael Red Fox, received a 17-year sentence for beating and strangling his girlfriend. One of the things that made the case unusual was Red Fox choosing to represent himself in court. But as KYUK's Greg Kim reports, there's much more to this case.
The prosecuting attorney in the case, Chris Knowles, says this was an alcohol-fueled event. Red Fox and his girlfriend had prepared homebrew to sell in order to pay their rent.
The victim in the case asked Michael Red Fox to stop drinking all the homebrew.
An argument ensued, during which Red Fox beat and strangled his girlfriend multiple times throughout his attack. She was finally able to stop Red Fox by stabbing him in the head with a screwdriver. After his arrest, Red Fox escaped, slipped his cuffs, and was on the run for 2 months before turning himself in. In the courthouse, things did not settle down. Red Fox, acting as his own attorney, cross-examined the victim for almost 8 hours. The victim was someone the court found to be particularly vulnerable due to a disability, and prosecuting attorney Knowles said Red Fox knew that.
During the first day of that cross-examination, she had a visible reaction. I think it may have been some type of seizure.
Judge Nate Peters handed down a 17-year sentence without probation, citing Red Fox's knowledge of the victim's disability and his escalating criminal history. Judge Peters also highlighted the community's condemnation of domestic violence as a factor in the term's length. Acting District Attorney Chris Storrs says this sentencing is part of a bigger picture.
I think that this case is an example of the courts taking domestic violence more seriously.
Storrs says this case was likely just one of many domestic violence assaults that Red Fox committed without getting caught. Both he and Knowles called this their, quote, one big shot to protect future victims from this perpetrator, now behind bars. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
For the first time in its more than 40-year history, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council will incorporate traditional knowledge from local communities into its core management plan for the Bering Sea region. Many believe local and traditional knowledge will help the council better manage the complex ecosystem and bring new light to regional issues, such as the changing climate. KNOM's JoJo Phillips reports.
The NPFMC has developed a new model, the Core Bering Sea Fisheries Ecosystem Plan, consisting of 5 strategic modules. Work has already begun on 2 of them, evaluating the impacts of climate change on fish species and beginning to use traditional knowledge in management of the region. According to NOAA spokesperson Julie Spiegel, the National Marine Fishing Service and the Council, quote, work together to get the most out of our fisheries for food and economic well-being, end quote. Julie Raymond Jacobian, the Social Science Program Director at COARIC, says the results of this cooperation have extensive implications for the entire nation.
The Bering Sea as a whole produces, I believe, 40% of the marine fish consumed in the United States. And the fisheries in the southern Bering Sea are worth over $1 billion every year.
In the past, Raymond Yacobian says it has been difficult for management strategies to simultaneously reflect national interests as well as local subsistence ones.
Yeah, so the North Pacific Fishery Management Council is making lots of decisions, and it has been a challenge in the past to get them to recognize and consider traditional knowledge from our communities in their decision-making.
Raymond Yacobian calls the new Bering Sea Fishing Ecosystem Plan, which acknowledges and incorporates traditional knowledge in its second action module, a really important step forward. But what exactly is traditional knowledge, and what practical applications does it have for fishery management? Raymond Yacobian helped COARIC draft a working definition.
Traditional knowledge is a living body of knowledge which pertains to explaining and understanding the universe and living and acting within it. It is acquired and utilized by indigenous communities and individuals in and through long-term sociocultural, spiritual, and environmental engagement.
She goes on to emphasize it as both deeply rooted in history as well as being adaptable and dynamic, all of which keep it relevant and useful in contemporary life. Currently, the action module regarding traditional knowledge is being built from the ground up, but social scientists already envision ways in which it can be included into management practices, like how to better understand the changing climate. Cultural anthropologist David Holin is the Coastal Community Resilience Specialist for Alaska Sea Grant, a partnership between the University of Alaska Fairbanks and NOAA. He says traditional knowledge can be extrapolated into larger data sets.
If you can understand that change at the local level, you can expand that outwards into gathering information at many different communities. And through doing that, you're able to really see the large-scale scope of what's going on.
Most recently, Holin has witnessed widespread changes in the subsistence practices of walrus hunters. He says regional hunters in the past covered vast areas of pack ice during hunting season.
They used to be able to plan their hunts, you know, a week out or even longer. But today it's you know, they don't know what the ice is going to do from day to day, and it's become very dangerous. And so they're having to actually hunt closer to their communities.
These patterns and activity are fundamental to understanding the immediate effects of climate change on the Bering Sea region and for putting together the management plan. At the same time, Raymond Yacobian points out that traditional knowledge might be the best source for historical climate data.
Traditional knowledge goes back millennia, many generations, and so by working with traditional knowledge holders, we're able to see patterns in climate that may not be visible through other means.
The Bering Sea region will continue to face unique environmental pressures and challenges in the years to come. But Raymond Yacobian believes there is a path forward, hinging on cooperation and trust.
We have a better chance of better outcomes if we're working together, and these modules are one way for us to do that, I think.
The Council is calling for nominations for the Task Force on Traditional Knowledge through July 31st. Reporting in Nome, I'm JoJo Phillips.
This is KYUK News. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Thanks for listening. Please send your news tips to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for the news in Yukdun coming up.